Why, hello, grandkids. Welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA After Dark.
Yeah.
Also, episode 121.
It is a late recording. We're recording it Saturday night. Not quite live. Live to tape, I suppose. So, yeah, we were watching Saturday Night Live just a minute ago. Like, so they had a rerun of some of the classics. We watched a old episode where Steve Martin was hosting back in the day with John Belushi, Bill Murray, etc.
Well, the segment that may have gotten my attention the most was John Belushi was on Weekend Update, and he did a story about trying to get people to vote, just because I feel like there has been a renewed effort as of late to get people to vote on various social media platforms, honestly, more this time around than maybe on Saturday Night Live. But right. It did kind of remind me we had a similar problem back then than we did now.
That occurred to me, too. Like, the idea of people not wanting to vote because it doesn't make a difference, or all politicians are the same. Like, I feel like...
Well, yeah, that's what also cracked me up, is that it's the same answers...
Right.
That are given today.
Yeah, I feel like that has remained strangely consistent. As much as other things have changed, I would say.
Yeah, names, exact issues, I'm sure. These things have all changed, but the core root of things completely the same.
Yeah, the people's attitudes the same, for sure. Well... I don't know what that means exactly, Kevin, but it was kind of interesting looking at those old episodes.
Yeah, and they were still, I would have to say that they held up.
I would say, though, that the Wild and Crazy Guy sketch, which we saw, of course, the the immigrant young man, I believe, played by Dan Aykroyd and Steve Martin, I think those characters are play a little bit differently today based on certain... cultural things.
Well, I would say that maybe they're not played these days.
I mean, they were they were really, I would say, you know, if I don't know if this would rise to the level of being assaultive, but it would definitely not be played as like, look at these goofy guys, you know.
Oh,
sort of. Light these days, I would say.
Yeah, that would definitely be a bit taboo to make fun of a an entire culture, you know, and just present them as complete buffoons.
Well, that probably doesn't help either. Yeah, there's multiple potential problematic areas with this one. So yeah, I feel like that was definitely of the time. Also, people smoking in bars seem strange to me.
That might have been the second biggest thing I got from watching those clips. I'm like, oh my god, because was it Gilda Radner and the other woman that I was not familiar with really were both smoking in that bar scene?
Yes.
But I mean that is a recent past thing that you know, there was not smoking in bars.
Yeah, but it was then.
Oh right.
Well, yes, we are getting a little bit of a late start tonight, but I think we're both up and ready for this, Kevin. So I'm feeling good here at the start.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how my gym testing goes tomorrow morning at 8, but I'm awake for now, and we will get through this. And that's the good thing about recording on Saturday. I don't need to post this tomorrow, so got plenty of time to do all the other fun stuff before this sees the light of day. But Ken, I kept on hoping that we could find a good segue to the first topic. But I've got to admit,
this is probably gonna be a tough one. However, you wanna, you know, you would have to pretty much craft a good segue ahead of time for this one.
Yeah, I was gonna say that maybe this one could lead into it. We were bankrupt on ideas.
So, yes, we were bankrupt on ideas on how to segue. And, well, this gentleman in the story also ended up being bankrupt, but really in the money department, more so than the idea department. He seemed to have plenty of ideas.
Yes. This gentleman certainly had lots of ideas. Because they give you his fake name in the article before they give you his actual name.
Yes, so this was... And
I'm trying to find what his actual name was. Because, and I mean, I think it's good to start with the man himself because, you know, they kind of tout the big story or the big con that he did. But this guy certainly started out at a lower con job level and worked his way up to what this article mainly describes.
Yes. So he said he was known as an extravagant spender and led a quite an extravagant lifestyle from the stories that are here in this article. So he had a beloved Chihuahua named Foxy, whom he draped in diamonds and designer dog clothes, and had a $2,690, dog carrier from Louis Vuitton. So yeah, that's for, as an example.
Yeah, that is really on the lower end of the things that he spent money on.
Yes. He also lived in a penthouse on Fisher Island, which is a semi-private island off of the coast of Florida, south of Miami, which apparently I think Oprah lived there at one point or had a house there as well as Julia Roberts.
Correct. Yeah. Only people that have just a poop ton of money had a place on Fisher Island.
Yeah, that's just so this guy is spending lots of money and telling people that he is a Saudi prince, which I guess we could have somehow, tried to segue from the recent news story of the Saudi prince craziness going on.
Yeah, there is definitely some other Saudi prince news of dismemberment that could have worked its way in there. But
yeah, this article actually came out before that recent story broke. So, he was telling people that he was a Saudi prince, but it turns out that actually was not the case, Kevin.
No, I still felt like there are some pieces in some of these large, fraud cases. I always feel like there's some piece missing. Although the McDonald's one that we talked about with the Monopoly, I feel like they, found out about the whole system of the crime. This one, there are just so many things I'm trying to figure out. This guy got arrested like a half a dozen times and convicted of various fraud schemes.
Yes, well...
Over the years.
He had a very, I would say, troubling childhood. He was an orphan in Colombia, but was adopted by an American couple and moved to Michigan when he was 6 years old. Okay, so his real name was Anthony Enrique Gignac. I've never seen that name before. Interesting.
Oh, right.
And he became known as a quote-unquote epic con artist for whom no scheme is out of reach, according to the U.S. attorney.
Yeah, well, the no scheme out of reach did not come about until... this last one where he was posing as a Saudi prince.
Mm-hmm. So it seems like his MO was basically to kind of con other rich people into giving him money to invest in some sorts of schemes. And basically using his, you know, extravagance to kind of, and somehow he was able to like name drop Saudi princes and things to kind of like make people think that he really was who he said he was. And somehow he gets away with some things in here that I'm not quite sure how that works.
American Express issued this guy so many credit cards. Right. And like on multiple occasions, again, like this guy kind of built up his problems or his fraud schemes. And I don't know how he can trick the same company that many times. Like how do your security protocols not catch the guy, you know, this guy doing this again?
Right. he was somehow like the story that was crazy to me, or at least that stood out maybe most to me, was when he was caught by the bail bondsman people. They arrested him, and he somehow talked them into letting him go into this bank that they were driving by. And he said he could get the money to pay them. He went in there, was somehow able to con American Express into giving him this like unlimited line of credit card.
Yeah.
By convincing them that he was this, Saudi prince.
Because he could name the two last pieces. They needed to know the last two things that were charged on the Saudi prince's card. And he actually named them. And then this is where part of it comes in. He said that he had an inside man at American Express that told him about the last two payments that the real Saudi prince had made that he was imitating. Oh. And it's just like, I guess I don't understand what that guy who's on the inside gets out of all this.
Perhaps a cut of the, well, okay. So I said it was unlimited, but I guess it only had a $200 million line of credit.
So yeah, that's a short leash to have to live with. For one credit card.
I can't imagine such a thing, Kevin.
Yeah, you would, if you got a line that big, you would really not have to worry about paying it back.
Well, that's what I was just thinking. But if it was American Express, I think you're supposed to like pay it back every month or something.
Yeah, at least that was my understanding.
So that's a little bit different, you know.
Yeah,
I'm probably not going to be able to churn through $200 million in a month for the foreseeable future. So that is just a crazy amount of money to spend in a month. I would just say that.
Yeah, but and I guess to get back to the point is that this was not the first time he talked American Express into giving him something ridiculous. And like, really, $200 million? Yeah. That's crazy. Like, to think that, oh, I just spent $200 million this month and I just paid that off too, if that's still the system.
So then immediately after getting this credit card, he booked two limos and embarked on a shopping spree with his bondsmen in tow. Like, these guys had to have been like completely blown away by his whole thing. I would think, like, why would they go along with all this?
Yeah, that really does not make you look good.
He bought two Rolex watches and a bracelet covered in emeralds and diamonds for $22,000. So that's, from being arrested to going on a shopping spree for Rolexes and diamond and gem-encrusted bracelet, I mean, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's pretty baller. I mean, this guy certainly did seem to like the good life.
He had a taste for expensive things, for sure, Kevin. Or still does, I presume.
Yeah, well, it, I mean, this is one of those people that even if he serves a longer sentence, I'm not sure he comes out any different. Like, he, again, like, this guy's already served, like, four stints in jail, and he just keeps on making up bigger con jobs each time he comes out. Although, I'm not sure that you can top this one, you know. Like, I don't know how you go bigger than balling on a Saudi prince's name for several years.
Yes. And this was another little detail after this story. When American Express, you know, their fraud department caught on, they called the bondsman and said that he's not the prince. He's committing credit card fraud right now. then they called Oscar and said he's not the prince and he's going to boogie, so he's going to run away, right?
Yeah.
And then the bondsman was stunned. He's on the plane to New York with my wife and daughter, he replied. So he was obviously a very charming fellow to be able to, like, there's a plenty of little examples of that kind of behavior where people are really seem to be kind of suckered into his, con man kind of powers.
Well, yeah, and it wasn't... that was one story. He ended up talking an Englishman who had 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 experience as being a CEO, hired him, and the guy worked for him again for like a fairly long amount of time. You know, like longer than I would have expected, honestly, and like the guy never caught on that it was a con job.
Yes.
And I believe one of the lawyers involved, he's like, I could tell that something wasn't right, but he goes, this guy was so good at what he's, you know, what he was lying about that it was hard to tell, hard to figure out where the lying started and the truth actually was. Like, he's like, I professionally, you know, have to listen to liars all the time, but this guy was so good that he couldn't really tell that he was lying. And I mean, that's kind of saying, you know, that kind of lends his expertise, I guess, this situation, why he could con so many people, is that he just really seemed to have an aptitude for talking.
Well, and maybe part of it is, as the headline to this article says, that he really thought that he was this Prince Khalid.
He made a scene about being, like, the one time I believe he was arrested coming back on a flight, and he, because didn't he start screaming that he was the prince?
Yes.
And they stopped from arresting him?
There was one point I know that where he was being arrested in a hotel, and he called out that if there were any loyal subjects of Saudi Arabia, that they should come help him. That he was the prince, Khalid.
I mean, that is some pretty ballsy stuff to be doing.
Yelling out in a hotel. Yeah.
Yeah. When you're caught and you're doing that, like, you're really, if you don't really believe, you are really committing to this.
Usually people, when they're caught, will give up. I feel like they won't continue going on with the thing for very long. Like, the cops will be like, look, we know what's going on here. And they'll be like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You got me. That was not this guy's MO. Like, he would continue to push back and actually say that he is the Saudi Prince Khalid. But so it does make you wonder, is part of it that he believes that he is the prince, and maybe that makes it more convincing for people, because he's in a way not lying, really, if he really believes it to be true.
And again, I maybe that's why people think that, like you said, that's why he convinces them. He's just so good at it. Like, he's so natural at being this person.
And somehow he's convinced himself that that's who he is. And it's like, he doesn't even have to put on the... Because I think when you're lying, you have to kind of... It's a little stressful. You have to, like, keep an alternate, set of events in your mind that you have to stick to, you know?
Right.
So that's a little more mental processing, and I think it makes it look more... You know, there's things that I think people can pick up on that might indicate you're lying. You know, if you're...
Oh, you got it, Ken.
Mr. Orange from Pulp Fiction. What's that guy's name?
Mr. Orange?
Right, wasn't that the guy who was the undercover cop?
Mr. Pink? No, it was Mr. Orange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can remember his code name, but for some reason I can't remember the actor's name.
Tim Roth,
that's right, because he was in that show Lie to Me.
Yep.
He could pick up on those kind of tells, I think, that you would see because of your brain kind of having to work overtime. But if you literally believed what you're saying was true, then I would think you wouldn't necessarily have those kind of tells. So maybe this would be able to foil Tim Roth's character from Lie to Me, who is not named Mr. Orange, as far as I know.
No, I cannot. I watched that show, but I do not remember what his name was on there.
That would be funny if his last name was Orange in that show for some reason. But I have a feeling they wouldn't really go out of their way to do that. Because it would be a little bit silly.
And I forgot this Gignac character, one of the times that he was in jail... He set fire to his room and put down soap to help trip up.
He put soap by the door so that the guards would slip when they were coming in and he'd be able to kind of escape because he was waiting by the door for them to like come rushing in and then kind of be able to overpower them. I mean, that is a pretty good idea, I think. I mean, a sort of evil idea. And really short-sighted idea at the end of the day. Because
it did not work.
No.
They did not really slip on the soap.
And even if that did work, he would still have to get through the rest of the prison guards, I would think.
Yes.
So that's maybe not thinking the whole way through there.
Yeah, it's a little questionable whether this could ever actually occur. Even if you were like CIA level, I would still think that it would take a more sophisticated plan than that to get out of there without being detected.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to be like Captain America level, I think, to try something a plan like that, where you're going to one man versus an entire crew of prison guards. You would need some sort of special super soldier serum, at least, I think,
to pull that off. Yeah, I would think that someone like Captain America could pull this job off. But, yeah, when you're a real human, and especially when you're one that... he did not particularly seem enamored with working out.
No, I would say not.
I'm not sure that he was obese or anything of that nature, but...
There is some artwork that accompanies this article, and now I guess that's not necessarily like true life 100%, but he's pretty consistently pictured as having a belly, shall we say?
Yeah, he's definitely overweight.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's another thing that I call into question. This guy does not seem to have any type of training that would aid him in getting out of a prison in a multiple fight situation.
Agreed. And so far that has borne out from what we've seen. So as far as people can tell, yes, this guy did come from Colombia, not from Saudi Arabia. But unfortunately, when he was younger, he was kind of forced into child prostitution for older men. I think he was probably effeminate, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, there were, because even after he came to the U.S., you think, oh, because he had a younger brother who he took care of, and he did that there, and they got adopted together, but then the parents that adopted them got divorced, and one, I think the mother got, the guy who believes himself to be Prince Khalid, because I can't think of his first name right now because they both have the same last name.
Right.
But the younger brother went with the father then. So, like, the one kind of constant that the guy had in his life ended up getting taken away from him in a divorce.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of crappy, splitting up the kids like that.
Yeah, I think that's pretty terrible, especially I would imagine that as the adopting parent, you'd be somewhat aware of the situation.
Yeah, with like the trauma and stuff.
Yeah, but and you wouldn't want to do that.
I think there was some indication that he had continued his prostitution career later in life after coming to the United States. Or at least that was maybe insinuated, and that somehow he could have come into contact with a member of the Saudi royal family in that role, I suppose.
Yeah, well, say. And I guess that was kind of the interesting thing is that, he told people that the prince needed to keep him quiet, so he always kept him paid in doing whatever he wanted because of their secret love affair.
Yes, that kind of was his story. Well, to some people, I guess, at least.
Yeah, to some people.
So who knows what really happened, although that would, I think, kind of make sense, since Saudi Arabia is a religious sort of country there. They probably would not. And I don't believe that the Muslim faith necessarily looks well upon homosexual relations.
Right.
With, that's a fairly common thing with conservative religious type beliefs, it seems like. No matter if you're a Christian or a Muslim or a, Jewish? Yeah, I think so too, right? Because that's in the Old Testament. So yeah. Buddhists, I don't know. Are they cool with that sort of thing, Kevin?
Not really sure.
Okay, we're going to have to do a little more research on that.
Yeah, I'm not going to just Wikipedia that one.
No, we're gonna, that makes more of a deep dive. There's not going to be an article on, Well, maybe there is an article. This would be an interesting wager. Is there an article for homosexuality in Buddhism on Wikipedia? What would your thoughts be there, yes or no?
On Wikipedia? Probably no. On the internet, definitely yes.
Yes. I might lean even yes towards Wikipedia, but I don't know. That's not a guaranteed article for sure. But what would be a guaranteed article for us to cover tonight, Kevin? Would be the strange story, I guess, of a burger restaurant that was doomed by its own success, in a way.
It's kind of funny. A newspaper, a journalist is putting a headline that is evidently completely accurate. I found the best burger place in America, and then I killed it.
Yes, by Kevin Alexander.
Yep.
In Thrillist, Portland.
This guy did have a pretty awesome gig because he ate at 330 different burger joints during a 30-city search.
Looking for the best burger restaurants in America. So you kind of have to, I feel like, in some level, respect him for going out there and doing the work, actually looking for the best burger restaurants, like not just doing sitting at his desk and doing internet searches.
Well, and that's it. He kind of mentioned within the article is that, you know, like everyone was just doing lists of all this stuff, and like all of the lists were kind of interchangeable. So actually doing this, you know, it's not really interchangeable. You know, you went out and 330 burger joints is a lot of burger joints.
I mean, I don't know how long it took him to do that.
Yeah, it didn't. I'm not sure that it ever really said.
But you would think that would take like a year at least. I don't know. To be able to have, I mean, all right, there's 360 days in 5 days in a year. How many burgers can you have in one day, would you say? And review those.
Breakfast, lunch, dinner?
Oh my God.
I mean, if you're committed, that's... right? But I mean, no. I realistically, lunch and dinner. But even then, like, oh my God, like, I would be so burnt out. If you did two burgers every day.
To try to do this in like 6 months or something?
Well, yeah, I guess if you try 330 places and two a day is 165 days. If you do it, yeah, if you ate two burgers a day, it'd be 165 days. And I mean, I guess it'd be a little rough with transit, depending upon how that's working, if you're flying or driving. I'd think that you'd almost have to fly with there only being 30 destinations.
Yeah, I'm just trying to look in here and see, and I really don't see anything mentioning how long that it took him to get around to all these 30 cities. But I don't know. It's got to be at least six months. But...
Yeah, at least 165 days. At least.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't see going over two burgers a day, and that still seems like you would... I would... 165... That's kind of crazy. Like, in even if you're only doing... If you're doing less burgers a day, then, yeah, I mean, you're really talking about a year.
And then, I'm not sure, like, how you... organize your notes to try to shuffle through all those burger places to like think that you got the right one, you know? Like you could have had one that you really liked, but then, you know, it gets lost in the shuffle somehow. I have questions about the methodology, I suppose.
Yeah. I guess that's still one of those things that's kind of interesting. Just because I know that I kind of, I didn't follow this guy in particular, but I certainly, when I go on trips, I look down what TV shows were at these food places, who went where.
Oh, okay.
You know, you kind of source the names, and they kind of talked about it in the article too, where, like, when this guy realized he killed the business, he's like, should he have named someone else number one?
Well, that's interesting. So like, maybe we should talk about that a little bit because, it doesn't necessarily make sense on the face of it that being voted or ranked the number one burger place in America would lead to you having to shut down your business. But, that is what happened in this case. And, it sounded like it was because they were basically getting overwhelmed with customers, and a particular kind of customer, really.
Yeah, they were not used to being packed, busy.
Mm-hmm.
It would seem like they didn't come out and outright say it, but it did seem like it was, you know, obviously busy enough to stay open because the place Stanich's is the burger place in Portland, Oregon that he named number one.
Open since 1949.
Yeah, it opened since 1949.
I don't know if that's part of the name or not, but it's mentioned along with the name everywhere in the article. It's like the Ohio State University of burger places. So yeah, Stanich's opened since 1939. They were 49, sorry. Giving them an extra 10 years there.
Yep.
They were really just like a little mom and pop place, literally with you know, a family running the restaurant, the waiters, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and I wasn't surprised too that you know, a lot of these shows kind of tell the people that they go to visit, like, hey, buy extra food because you're going to get slammed after this. Because, yeah, you see them on TV, and I mean, again, like, I know that I do that. I go to places that have been on TV. Now, I guess a lot of the places that I've gone to, it's been years after they were initially on TV. So I don't know if it's not as slammed at that point. You know, I don't know how long-term the effect is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know, but it did sound like there was long wait times for food, and
yeah, because they had I'm trying to think of the famous country musician. Was it Tim McGraw?
Tim McGraw, right? Tim McGraw came, but they couldn't get him food because there was like a 4-hour wait for burgers, and it sounded like that was stressing out a lot of the staff.
Yeah, and they say, because it was kind of interesting, because this was kind of the cool part of the one of the cooler parts of the article, too, is that the Kevin, was it Williamson? No, that was high school, or grade school. Kevin Alexander called the owner of Stanich's and ended up meeting him again, like after they had closed down.
Yes, the author had caught wind that the restaurant had to close after being ranked number one, and he, I think this would have been a hard call to make to try, like, if you feel like you somehow were responsible for this guy's business closing down, to then reach out to him to try to talk to him would probably have been a pretty hard thing to do, I'm guessing. And he mentions it in the article too.
Yeah, which... I was not surprised that he was having a hard time picking up the phone, because that is got to be a little bit rough. Like, oh, I cost a bunch of people their jobs.
Yeah, and like,
and it had been open since 1949, and I killed it in 2016 or whatever this was exactly.
Yeah, and you know, killed your livelihood. At least for the moment. But yeah, so it seemed to be hard on the staff to have all this business. And the other thing, I guess, was that the people who were coming there were just one-time customers. They had been used to kind of a, you know, regular crowd, I guess.
Yeah.
People that they kind of knew who would come in and, you know, get their food, get their burgers. And part of what made the food good perhaps was that, you know, they were able to take their time and kind of handle the amount of people that they could, right? Like, they don't have like an industrialized process like McDonald's does where they can, you know, cook a billion burgers. Right. So weirdly, by winning this contest, that almost has to change the character of the restaurant, and I guess that's what they were talking about too in this article. Like, he wasn't sure, like, they were going to have to reopen probably in a different form if they were going to reopen at all, to be able to handle the crowds, you know. So they would have to partner with another restaurant, it sounded like, was one of their ideas.
Yeah, and it did sound like they kind of ended up planning on reopening. Like, they kind of stayed closed longer than they expected, but it did seem like by the end of the article that they were going to reopen, in my opinion.
Yeah. But in some also, it seemed like a different form than what they had been after they reopened.
Yeah, they did mention that they had done a number of improvements on the building itself. Because that, I guess that was one of those other things that character-wise, the guy, Kevin Alexander there, kind of liked the atmosphere of the bar too, because it was just kind of a grimy, you know, local towny type bar. It sounded like,
right. So the atmosphere helped out in the overall quality of the experience, I guess.
Yeah.
And so that will have changed for sure. If nothing else, cause they've renovated and done some cleaning up and things like that, which, you know, I don't know. It's one of those weird things that it reminds me a little bit of the, in physics, I think it's the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, which is like, if you measure the, you know, either the speed or the location of a particle, you will like change it, so you won't know what the other thing is. So it, like, in a way you can't like list a restaurant as a number one restaurant somewhere without changing that restaurant, you know?
I guess that's one of those things that I'm kind of, just because I had never really heard of Thrillist that much, but then I saw this article pop up on Twitter, you know, because someone had thrown it out there. I'm just like, oh. And just because, like I said, like, just because I kind of do this type of stuff, it's kind of interesting. You know, I do go to a lot of places just once. Maybe not necessarily just to Instagram it, but, you know, if nothing else, there's almost always good food.
Yeah.
You know, and I always say that's the other reason why it kind of gets easy to try pretty much anywhere, even if it isn't Instagrammed. There are just a lot of good restaurants out there, period. And the guy kind of worried about the weight of this, and yeah, it's kind of hard what to say. Because I honestly, like, that was one of those things where I learned when I was over in Italy to just try places. They did not need to be on the main street. Like, I don't know how many people suggested just finding a hole, literally a hole in a wall, you know, like in a side alley. And there were restaurants that were like that, that were completely tasty.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I guess people are going to find places like this, and someone's probably eventually going to write about something like this. I guess it's kind of interesting to see who has the most pool, you know? Like, just because I had never heard of Thrillist or this guy writing about this, you know, embarking upon this journey. Like, I've only heard about this aftermath now.
Well, it seems like this is somehow related to a concept that I saw. It was one of the potential words of the year from the Oxford English Dictionary. The word was over-tourism. And it seems like that is a similar idea, where it's like you can actually have too much of like people coming there just to, you know, spend their money, basically. It can end up having negative effects on, you know, the people there. You know, the environment, what have you. And this would seem like a case of that, really.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the environment one. That was one that is always kind of weird to me. Like, it is kind of nice seeing beautiful stuff, but you're kind of causing problems by going to see said stuff.
Or, yes, if there reaches like a critical mass of having that many people there, going there throughout a year to view it, and all the stuff that comes along with having people there.
Yeah, whether it's, you know, emissions or just people kind of walking, you know, wherever that territory is.
Mm-hmm. So over tourism, I guess, it seems to be a timely topic here, and it applies to burger places too, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of sucks. And you know, obviously that was not that guy's the writer's intention either. Like, I understand feeling the blame, but they also did mention the owner did mention that there were some extenuating circumstances that were not made completely clear in the article that helped the place go under. You know, it was aided by the article and by the rush of people, but there were some underlying problems that were just exacerbated by this kind of situation.
Yeah. So, well, it is interesting. They said one of the other article, well, one of the other places in the article was this, that they mentioned was this ceviche restaurant that had been ranked as like one of the top ceviche restaurants, you know, in the country.
Yeah. Well, the guy, it was like one of the top ranked, was it in Peru or it was in South America?
I think it was Peru. Yeah.
Somewhere. And, he came to the U.S. to get out of the spotlight, and then, you know, some guy ended up going into his place and ended up writing about it, and it became super busy. So he said, oh, fuck it, I don't want to deal with this many people, and turned it into a breakfast restaurant.
Right, he just, like, completely stopped serving ceviche and, like, just made it, like, a focus, like, a breakfast, basically, and lunch with, like, a focus on coffee. So he wanted just to have like a place where the local people would come and kind of have it there for the community. He didn't want it to be there for like all the food tourists, I guess, that are going to come in and, you know, just kind of spend and leave. So I don't know. It's an interesting question, which I would not have even begun to think of as a problem before I started reading these kind of articles. So.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess that's the other thing, is that when we've done this, like, I've never felt like I've gone anywhere that was completely cuckoo bonkers, like they're talking about with these. You know, I know, again, I know that a lot of these places have been on TV shows, or even owned by famous chefs. Like, I mean, I guess Emeralds is usually pretty crowded. We went to one of each of his restaurants both times we went into New Orleans. But I guess they're kind of ready for it, too.
Hmm.
You know, they're kind of used to that tourism dollar.
Yeah, I don't know. Like some of the little diners, drive-ins, and dives, if you will. I'm not sure if there could have been some of those that had troubles after becoming famous from TV.
I would imagine.
Yeah. But not something I would have ever thought about, like the kind of responsibility of promoting a restaurant. It's a strange concept for me.
Yeah. And maybe we shouldn't promote our beer at the end of the show, Ken. These brewers might not be able to keep up with the capacity that they're going to need after we suggest our beer.
Yeah, I don't know. That could be something we need to think about, Kevin. Maybe we can have like code names or something to just sort of describe it in general terms without letting people know specifically what kind of beer it is. That might be the kind of middle ground. I don't know. We'll think about it.
We'll get back to you. Don't worry about it.
But something that people have been thinking about a lot, Kevin, is being able to create drones that are capable of doing some work, actually. Sure, drones are cool to fly around and put cameras on them and, you know, in like a search and rescue situation, you could have one, you might imagine being able to fly into a dangerous area and kind of see what's going on. But it would be nice also to have it be able to actually do something and move something around, move something out of the way.
Yeah.
Open a door, you know? And that is a bit of a problem with these little flying drones, because there's a very limit to what they are able to carry.
This is definitely, the article itself gets down into the nitty gritty of physics.
Yes.
The video that you showed me just kind of showed way more about what these little tiny drones can do. But they do use friction to help anchor themselves.
Yes, and they are able to get their friction on in a couple different ways. One is by using these little claw, kind of little wire claws, I guess, about the same diameter as like a paperclip maybe, that can kind of like dig into a cloth kind of material. So it's like an anchor, say for a carpet or something along those lines.
Yeah.
So it then, once it's kind of anchored in, has a winch mounted on it, basically, that it can, attach something to a string and then pull the winch in. And these have all been manually flown, the ones in the video. So it wasn't like these were able to be,
programmed
autonomously. Yeah. But they were able to latch onto a floor and pull down on a door, a handle, and then open it.
Now, the opening the door did require two of these drones.
Yes.
But it's still pretty cool.
One had to pull down the handle, and the other had to actually open the door. So, yeah, that was a two-drone situation. And I think that would mean that only one drone would be able to get through the door, actually, because one would probably have to hold it open while the other one got through, if you were going to try something like that.
Oh, yeah, I would think so. Unless it doesn't have a closer on it, then you're okay.
Yeah, if it doesn't pull itself closed, yeah. So it depends on the situation, I guess, but...
Yeah, I would imagine that it might be a little even harder, because, a door like that normally has more action on it, and it would be harder to open. I think they were only doing the pull doors without closers. I think that one in the video did not have a closer.
Okay, I couldn't tell. It did seem like
Now that I think about it a little bit more, like, it'd just take more pulling power in that situation. I'm not saying that they couldn't do it, because they could probably do it, but...
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It would be pretty hard to do, but they seem like they were able to do okay. So then there's also a different kind of suction that they have, or friction, I guess, that they have for more smooth surfaces. And that is based on the kind of pads that gecko have on their feet that let them to be able to climb up basically all kinds of surfaces.
Oh, right.
And it works by somehow using the, you're creating like a static charge basically somehow on these little surface areas.
Yeah.
And that will like stick to like a smooth surface. So that's kind of cool to be able to handle all kinds of surfaces. Although I feel like the smooth surface might not have as good a amount of friction that they can produce as the clawed grip would be, but because they didn't show the smooth surface version in the video, so it's hard to say for sure. But that's just kind of my gut reaction, I guess, from what they were showing. So, either way, this is kind of a cool idea. I've never seen a drone with a winch on it before, which I thought was a pretty neat idea.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy just to be able to have something that small pull on something that's that heavy. Because, I mean, they were showing them winching up like a full, just like standard water bottle. And this thing can't be more than a couple of pounds.
Oh, no. I'm sure it's a lot less than it's probably like on the around a pound or something like that, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Just from looking at it, because it was like a really small one. They were saying it was like a micro drone. So, yeah. And to be able to, like you said, winch up a whole bottle of liquid is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool little invention. It will be crazy to see what happens with drones in the future.
Yeah, stay tuned. But Amazon still hasn't started delivering things with drone, by the way.
Oh,
I believe he did say originally that they would be at this point. but as we've seen, apparently you cannot trust everything that Jeff Bezos says, including his HQ2 promises, which it seems like is more like HQ1.5, as it turns out.
Well, and someone also said that maybe you're having problems understanding the word headquarters if you have three of them.
Yeah, unless you're like Cerberus or something, because I believe that that dog did have three heads.
Yeah, but it had one body.
Yes. Well, we are talking about headquarters, though, so I don't know.
So does that need to be four since it's called quarters?
So there's still one more to come. I guess that could be it. It could be his interpretation.
Yeah. Cerberus was always missing a head.
No wonder he's such an angry dog.
Well, Ken, I think it's probably about time to call this one.
Yep, I agree, Kevin. The clock on the wall is saying that we're at the end of our show.
And I think that we could talk a little bit about some New Holland Brewing, The Poet, Oatmeal Stout. You know, for not having anything to, you know, it's a pretty standard stout. It's very tasty for, you know, just being a pretty standard stout. You know, there's no milk in it, so there's not like that extra kick of sweetness. It has a nice toastiness to it and a nice smoothness to it.
Yeah, I think it was good for what I was looking for tonight. So, I was in a IPA run there for a long while, and I feel like I'm in looking for more of a darker beer experience these days. So this was a oatmeal stout, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
So yeah, that was a nice kind of comforting beer to have on a chilly. Well, actually, today wasn't that chilly, but it's getting chillier out there, so. It felt like the time for this sort of thing.
Yeah, it does not give the stats on that, so on the bottle. But hopefully New Holland Brewing does not go out of business because of our suggestion.
Oh, shit, that's right. We forgot to anonymize there. Oh, well.
So do not blame at Gozer33. Mm-mm. Do not blame at DeFrango11. Do not blame... Blame. Why am I having a problem saying that word?
Do not blame or brame.
Yeah. Yeah. Blame at Stunt Granny. And if you do blame us, rate us 5 stars and roast us on iTunes, and we will read it back on the next show. And I'm just blatantly stealing other people's stuff at this point.
All right, man.
Have a good night.
See ya.